Mr. Maratoghi, thank you so much for joining us today. I want to start with perhaps the most obvious question. Tunisia has gone from this success story, this example from the Arab Spring, and now some see it as perhaps a warning. What's gone wrong and who's to blame?
I think it's not about Tunisia, it's about the Arab Spring as a whole, because what we saw in Tunisia is exactly what we saw in Egypt, in Syria, in Libya, and in Yemen. What happened is that, in fact, I think there was a regional decision, not a very clear regional decision to tackle this problem of the Arab Spring and to avoid the contagion and to do everything to sabotage the Arab Spring. And this is exactly what happened. Unfortunately, Syria was destroyed by the civil war, Yemen by the civil war, Libya also, Egypt by a military coup, and Tunisia also by a constitutional coup, by election, by bribing the media, etc., etc. So the failure of Tunisia is in fact the failure of the Arab Spring as a whole. And this is probably the most important lesson that we can draw from what happened during the last 10 years, is the democratization in any country is no longer a domestic issue. It's, for the moment, it's a regional issue and international issue. It means that Tunisia couldn't succeed by any means because of the decision taken at regional level by regional powers, you know, to stop and to sabotage the democratic transition. So let's talk about the whole problem and not about the specific problem. Of course, we bear a responsibility in what happened in Tunisia. But I do know that it was mainly the intervention of external factor. And the external factor played this important role, as I told you, to the what happened in Syria, what happened in Lebanon. So we have to consider the whole landscape and not only focus on Tunisia.
In terms of the threat that places like Tunisia and the Arab Spring spreading across the region, I mean, who exactly, like, was this threatening to? You know, we're talking about decisions being made as well. Who is making these decisions and why is the Arab Spring such a threat to these regional powers?
Well, because the Arab Spring is, you know, the fact that you have new generations, what I call the E-generation, and the new generation are extremely opposed to the ancient political system. This ancient political system inherited from the Middle Ages and from the, you know, about the rule of one man, of one tribe, of one party, etc., etc. And you have this contradiction, the deep contradiction between the E-generation, our youth connected, extremely interested in freedom, all kind of freedom. Look what's happening in Iran. This also, once again, it's a matter of a new generation against an old political system. So the old political system in the Arab world, we do know that he is responsible for the situation where we were before the revolution. And everybody was, I think the new generation was extremely unhappy with this kind of regime, wanting more freedom and wanting also more efficient regime, because don't forget that the main reason for the uprising in our countries were social and economic reason, not only democratic, not only battle for freedom, but always for the improvement of the social and economic condition. So this is why I think, even if we have had this failure, the failure of the Arab Spring in the last 10 years, I think it's just a matter of time. And then, because now what's happening in Tunisia, what's happening in Syria, everywhere, it's okay, we have the failure of the revolution, but we have also the failure of the counter-revolution. So now the situation in Tunisia and elsewhere in our country is that you have both. You have the failure of the revolution, the failure of the counter-revolution, and this is why I'm expecting a new wave of revolution, because the counter-revolution couldn't deliver anything. So the process is still ongoing. So talking about the failure of the revolution in Tunisia or in Egypt, I think it's too premature.
Let's talk about a person who has been described as a figure of counter-revolution in Tunisia, the current president, Qais Saied. Can you explain his actions, perhaps why he has carried out the moves he has in the past few years, his attempts to, or what his opponents would say are his attempts to roll back democracy? What do you think his goals are?
Well, Qais Saied is part of the contribution. He didn't play any role. You know, I know this because I was in the fight against dictatorship for more than 20 years. I never met him. He never played any role in toppling the dictatorship. He never played any role in building the new democracy for the first 3 years when I was in charge. He was part of the contribution, and he was part of the contribution for other reasons than the old political system. I think he's playing his role. He's playing his role in coming back to the old political system. The constitution of 2022, the constitution he gives himself to the country, is extremely similar to the constitution after the independence. It, once again, the rule of one man, all the power grabbed by one man. And this is what exactly we didn't want after the revolution. After the revolution, we have decided that no longer we would depend on the will of one man, because what has destroyed our country and all the Arab country, the fact that you have a nation of 100 million people like in Egypt, whose fate would depend on the will of one man. And this, the will of man, one man has destroyed Iraq, has destroyed Syria, has destroyed Libya. And this is why we didn't want to come back to this political system. And this guy, he's coming back once again to the old political system, and he will face the same problem faced by his predecessor, because one man cannot rule a nation. You badly need today to have parliament, to have structure, to have institution, to have rules, etc., to have a democratic system. Democratic system is needed by for the security, for the development of any nation. So this is why, once again, I'm telling you that we have the revolution failed. The regional power did everything, to make it fail. But once again, this counter-revolution is not delivering. This Qais Saied is not delivering anything. And I think he would never stay in power for long.
And yet, Qais Saied does have a degree of support in Tunisia from a section of Tunisian society. You've previously written about the rise of populist politics around the world and populist politicians. Do you see the same factors that have led to the rise of Qais Saied as this politician who is against the elite? Do you see that as an example of a wider issue that has been occurring, not just in the Arab world, but in the West as well?
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. It's an international phenomenon. Look what's happening in Brazil. Even in the United States, you have this guy, this former president. He's typical of what a populist leader is.
Donald Trump being.
Yeah, Donald Trump. Look, what happened in Tunisia is when you set up a new democratic system, it takes a long time. It's frustrating because you have to wait for the result. You cannot have overnight, the result, economic result. Democracy cannot deliver immediately. It takes a long time. And for our population, unfortunately, it's, people, you can understand people, they are impatient because they have suffered so long under the dictatorship, so they want you to deliver immediately, to deliver not only freedom, political freedom, but also to deliver social and economic development. And this, unfortunately, we couldn't. And then you have this kind of politician coming, hey, look, the democracy is not delivering anything. They are just talking, look, the corruption in the parliament. And of course, when you set up for the first time any political system, you have a lot of dysfunction, So they would play on this kind of problem to say, I am going to be the solution. Okay, you'll be the solution. Now, you are on charge. What are you delivering? Mm-hmm. And this is why I wouldn't say that fortunately we have had this, new episode of the counter-revolution, but now the population in Tunisia are watching that, in fact, the populists are not delivering anything. Exactly the same thing in Egypt, where the Egyptians are now watching the fact that the dictatorship, harsh dictatorship, is not delivering either. This is why I'm expecting a new wave of democratization very, very soon.
Has the Tunisian opposition been capable in countering Qaisi's narrative?
No, absolutely not.
Why?
Well, because the opposition is extremely divided. In fact, the opposition, unfortunately, in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Syria, is extremely divided. And I am working hard, you know, in Tunisia to make them, you know, sit together, talk together, forget about the ideological differences, because they are this problem between Islamists and secularists, you know. Even in Tunisia, we couldn't overcome this gap between secularists and Islamists. And I hope we are going to. But you know, what happened in Tunisia in 2011, the revolution wasn't, you know, because of the political party, it was because of the population. The young people took to the street. They were not because they were Islamists or secularists, because they have their own problem. This is exactly what would happen. I think the change would come from within the society and not from the political party. The political party will join the you know, the wave, but probably they were not going to you know, to drive it.
Why have there not been those mass protests then, like, considering what Qais Saied has been doing over the past few years and what the opposition has been arguing has been his motives and the counter-revolution, you know, why have we not seen these mass protests?
There was a lot of them, but look...
But not on the same scale as obviously what we saw.
Yes, but you know, in 2010, there was no massive protest at exactly the same way. I remember at the time when this great martyr of our revolution, Mohamed Bouazizi, set himself in fire. I couldn't expect anything, you know. I didn't expect that there would be this rise of... In fact, at that time, nobody was able, you know, to say that we are going to have a revolution. And this is exactly what happened. I always say that, you know, that talking about Arab Spring is not the most accurate image. The most accurate image would be talking about volcano, Arab volcano. And you know what's happened with the volcano. You look at the volcano, it's stable. You say, okay, it's stable forever. And then you never know when it bursts, you know. And I think that now, for the moment, the Arab volcanoes are stable. You know, watch them, you say, oh, the people are not doing anything. And you cannot expect at any time, the volcano would burst, because the pressure inside the volcanoes is mounting. The pressure is poverty, is humiliation, is frustration, is, you know, anger, and all this pressure, all those, you know, those ingredients, you know, are working inside the volcano. Nobody knows exactly how, and nobody knows exactly when the volcano would burst, but you'll be sure that the volcano would burst.
Some would say that the events of the past decade in Tunisia, but also elsewhere, has made many Arabs feel like revolutions can't succeed, and that perhaps that's the reason why, you know, mass protests aren't happening nowadays. Do you see, you know, yourself, you were president for 3 years during that period, and, you know, I've seen people in Tunisia refer to the whole decade as, you know, the black decade and things like that. What went wrong in those years? Like, you know, did anything that you did yourself as president, is there anything that you would then go back and do differently now? Were there any mistakes that you made that perhaps wouldn't have led to where Tunisia is today?
Once again, we don't bear the responsibility of what happened. Once again, the intervention of political actors, foreign political actors, played an important role in the sabotage of our revolution. It was not just, once again, the domestic matter. But of course, we have made a lot of mistakes. And I think the most important mistake is that the transition took 3 years, you know, to set up new constitution, the new institution, the new, et cetera, et cetera. That during this time, 3 years, the economy was a standstill, because it's well known everywhere that when you have a political instability, the economy doesn't work. The investor, foreign investor or national investor would say, let's wait and see. Let's wait until the situation becomes stable, then we will invest, then we will do everything. And this is what happened exactly. We have inherited from a corrupt economy, inefficient economy. During the 3 years, the economy was at a standstill, and the people were exactly, once again, people took to the street, okay, for the freedom, for democracy, but they took to the street also for the improvement of the social and economic. And because we couldn't deliver, because we took 3 years, it was too long, you know, to tackle the social economic problem. This is why the counter-revolution could play and say, hey, look, they didn't deliver, we are going to deliver. Okay, now you are in charge, you didn't deliver anything. This is why, once again, I see the Tunisian, the Egyptian had no choice for the moment than to take to the street again, because if they accept, you know, to live under the regime, the populist regime in Tunisia and the dictatorship in Egypt, elsewhere, etc., it means that the situation are going, you know, to worsen day after day.
I take it to mean that you expect in the next few years that there will be protests and there will be mass movement. Do you expect there to be more oppression as well, specifically in Tunisia now from the president?
Yes, more oppression. And what I am afraid of is that it could be more violent because, you know, in Tunisia or in Egypt, it was not that violent. And hopefully, I hope that the next revolution would be as peaceful. But I am afraid that probably that could be more violent because the level of frustration of, you know, of anger in the youth in Tunisia or Egypt is extremely high. And the other side, the government are extremely afraid because they know that next revolution, there will be no transitional justice, there will be no pardon, exactly what we have done, I bear the responsibility of saying, look, we have to have the most peaceful transition possible. Let's revert to transitional justice and not to justice, etc. But I'm afraid that the next revolution, because of this anger, this frustration in this population, and because of this fear in the government, I hope to avoid this, but I don't know exactly why. It means that we sit with the government and try to find a compromise. But, you know, I cannot imagine that the Sisi cannot sit with the Egyptian opposition to look for a compromise. And I don't think that also Kais Saied can be as wise as, you know, to sit and discuss so we can avoid a new revolution. Unfortunately, I think that we're going to have this new revolution and maybe they could be more violent.
Thank you so much for your time today, Mr. Marzouki.